Welcome to the Stroke Busters podcast. I'm your host, Amy Quinn, and I'm thrilled to take you on a journey into the fascinating world of stroke research and innovation. Join us as we delve into the latest breakthroughs and insights from the Institute for Stroke and Cerebrovascular Diseases at UT Health Houston. Each episode will bring you captivating conversations with top physicians, researchers, and courageous survivors, offering valuable perspectives on cutting-edge research, transformative therapies, and inspiring tales of resilience in the face of adversity. So get ready to expand your knowledge and be inspired by the incredible work being done in the world of stroke care. This is a Stroke Busters podcast, where we break barriers, ignite curiosity, and empower change. Today, we are honored to have with us a distinguished guest who brings over 20 years of invaluable research experience to the field of stroke care. Starting her journey at MD Anderson Cancer Center and Baylor College of Medicine, she has made significant contributions to neurology and stroke research at Texas Oncology and currently at UT Health Houston. A native Houstonian, she not only excels in her professional endeavors, but also embraces an active lifestyle, so she's practicing what she preaches. She has conquered numerous marathons, 10Ks, 5Ks, showing her determination and resilience. From mud runs to step aerobics and trampoline classes, she embodies the importance of physical wellness. But beyond her professional and athletic achievements, our guest is deeply committed to community service. She actively participates in health fairs, community outreach programs, and provision events, demonstrating her dedication to giving back and improving public health. Join me in welcoming our guest, a passionate researcher, an avid athlete, and a devoted community advocate, Gail Cooksey. Hi, Gail. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Stroke Busters. For our listeners, today we have Gail Cooksey. She is a clinical research program manager over stroke prevention, supporting Dr. Angel Sharif in the Department of Neurology here at UT Health Houston in the McGovern Medical School. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your position, and how you got into stroke research.
Well, yes, my name is Gail Cooksey, and I got into research as a whole about 20 years ago, working for MD Anderson in the leukemia department. The doctor that I was working for at that time needed someone to help him with his research. I was not 100% sure what the job entailed, but he approached me and asked me, would I mind helping him to do some of his research? And again, I walked in blind, didn't know what it all entailed, and that's how my research career started. I was what I would call the infantry stage, and I've grown since then. And again, that was back in 2004, so it has been 20 years.
Happy anniversary.
Well, thank you very much. My position now, as it is, I started with doing research coordination. I was a research coordinator for many, many years in breast oncology. And then my dad had a stroke in 2013, and that's what prompted me to come into the stroke environment. I had only done cancer research up until that point. And so once I, my dad had the stroke, as I said, I was inclined to want to learn more about stroke and trying to help others in this area to help try to prevent strokes, as well as trying to help them just to get better in the community as a whole, because behind the scenes, I didn't know as much as I know now, obviously with me working in this industry, but there's so much growth and so much to learn just about stroke from the community standpoint.
That's fascinating. You know, we always appreciate researchers and doctors who have a personal connection to the work that they do. It's got to drive you every day, I'm sure.
Yes, it actually does. It is when it's personal, it affects you, like you said, a little bit differently. You want to find the reasons, and you want to try and prevent others from going down that path if you can.
For sure. So, you know, with knowing that about you on your day-to-day,
What are some of the things that you find most impactful and meaningful in your work?
So some of the things that I find impactful is the opportunity to go and talk with the patients on the floor to get to know them and to find out what their goals are. And in doing so, you find that you really have a lot in common with these people. You see the same type of person all of the time. You can't save the world, but you can save one or two. And with that, if you can save that one or two, you've done great for the day. And when I say saving the world and saving one or two, some patients are just really not apt to doing what we ask them to do. And then there are some that goes over and above and achieve all the things that we ask them to do, and it helps to prevent secondary strokes. And I find that so meaningful. It helps me to know that I helped someone.
Oh, I bet. So the majority of the patients that you're seeing have had a stroke.
Yes.
And then y'all are trying to prevent
a secondary stroke, yes.
What are the rates of secondary stroke?
It's quite large. We've seen so many patients that come in and we'll see them readmitted within the year. So it's very large.
So tell us your perspective on research when you have to consider social determinants of health in stroke patients. And can you kind of give us just a little background of what social determinants of health are? Like, what are some things that y'all consider in your research as far as that's concerned?
So what we consider in our research is helping everyone equally, regardless of their insurance status or their likeliness of having any type of income. Our approach is to treat everyone equally and offer them everything we can to get them the best healthcare for their diagnosis. That's my approach anyway. I go in and I talk to everyone as if they are the same.
So you've already mentioned previously how sometimes, you know, patients can, it's hard sometimes to follow doctor's orders. You know, we all get caught up in life and prevention of future strokes, you know, depends on, you know, taking care of yourself and eating well and, you know, keeping your brain active and exercising, all those good things. What are some other challenges in your line of work that you see with these patients?
So the main challenge is, just as you mentioned, we will send them out with, of course, the medications the first month, but a lot of the times they just fall through the cracks with affording food. So they revert back to what they were eating prior to having the stroke. They revert back to those bad habits, smoking and drinking and possibly doing drugs or whatever. And this is what causes them to come back. Now, if we can grasp them early on and educate them on the proper foods to eat, the diet that we recommend is Mediterranean. Most times, if a patient is obviously older, we see the adult population, they're pretty much set in their ways. So they're gonna eat what they've grown up to eat all of their lives. So it's really hard to just educate, and it's really hard for them sometimes to grasp what we're saying in 2 months, because they'll do what we want them to do in those 2 months, but then after that they revert back to what they've always done for their whole life, to just to make it in today's society. Everything is so expensive, and to eat healthy, so to speak, is expensive for them when they have a family of six people and they're trying to eat a certain kind of way versus grabbing a burger that's 99, well, I don't even know if it's 99 cents, but it's cheaper than eating healthier options, and reverting back to those old ways of drinking to dissolve their stress or smoking to dissolve their stress because they've had a hard day at work. And this is what I find to be probably the number one barrier in us capturing these patients early to help them to revert to a healthier lifestyle.
That is something we keep seeing a lot of, is a lot of these things can be eased or reduced with more mental health access or care, or like you said, they might pick up that drink because they're stressed, or resort to fast food or different things. And maybe if we had, you know, better resources to manage the stress levels and mental health. I bet that would be a catalyst to help the rest.
Absolutely. We tend to offer, like I said, all of that. In the research that I'm doing specifically, we have social workers, we have pharmacists, we have education on food choices, and we offer therapy. We send them out to different OT, PT, and all these other things. It's just, I believe if they don't have a strong family support to help with those things, that's when, you know, life takes over more than caring for themselves. They go back to work. The first question that I'm, at least 89 to 90% of the time, the first question is always, when can I go back to work? Because if they're not working, there's no money being generated into the house, and they're thinking about their kids or their family or whoever they're taking care of. So they overexert themselves at work to the point where now they're fired because they can't do the job that they once did because they didn't take the proper time to heal. And a lot of the healing, again, is with food and exercise and getting those therapies, whether it's mental or physical. So it's just really a targeted area in which I'm very interested in trying to help all of the community get what they need, get the access they need from not only healthcare, but through the job systems as well, so they won't feel so pressured to have to go back to work and do all these things when they're not 100% healed.
That's amazing. I love this kind of whole person approach to healing and prevention. So looking to kind of this next generation of researchers, people coming up in the field, what advice would you give to them to encourage them to pursue, you know, these similar careers?
So the best advice that I would give to them is to take everything in and take it in as if it was your family member. You want to see that person exceed, and you want to see that person go beyond a research study. What I tell my patients when I do go enroll them, especially if it's a drug study, that they are potentially helping the community as well as their own family members. And you know, I always use the example of Tylenol. And I take them to the level where they can understand. If such and such hadn't tested this drug over 50 something years ago, you wouldn't have something on the counter to go and buy for your headache. So that's what we're that's what we're trying to potentially do for the future of the next person that walked through the door in your shoes. So for the future people that's coming into research, I would ask that they not only consider it a job, but to consider it a career, because it takes so much time and so much effort to get these patients to do what we need and collect all the data that we need to see it come into fruition.
Wonderful. Are there any studies that y'all are currently working on that you can talk about that you're excited about?
Yes, I'm actually working. I manage the entire group of our prevention studies, and we have 7 right now. But the one that I'm most passionate about is our virtual study, in which we found that during COVID, we had a lot of patients to have strokes and then return. And they were returning due to lack of being able to see a provider or, you know, during COVID, everything was so uncertain. So there was patients going home and didn't have any direction. They didn't know what to do. So we developed this program called Virtual, in which we are able to see you over the camera, like I'm seeing you now. We're able to connect via Zoom, whether you're here in Houston or not, and to encourage a healthier lifestyle to prevent another hospitalization and another stroke that could be potentially worse off than the first stroke.
That's got to be the only good thing that came out of COVID increase in telehealth.
Yes, the increased amount of it went from like 5% to 90% overnight. It was like amazing how you saw it grow.
Yeah, a lot of people getting help for that reason, but we're also still seeing some of the fallout of COVID for those people who could not get treatment when they needed to.
Exactly.
Well, Gail, is there anything else that you want to let our audience know about either the research you're doing, your department, your colleagues?
Well, I would say that we have here at UT, we have some of the best neurologists to see any and everyone for their neurological needs. Speaking specifically for my doctor, Dr. Sharif, and her co-PI, Dr. Opala, and the other staff members, I think that under her direction, I've grown tremendously since I've been here, which is 8 years. She's the type of person that's going to go above and beyond the call of duty, so to speak. So we're in touch pretty much 7 days a week, Monday through Monday, even on the weekends. We're talking in regards to trying to help and to improve. I've gained so many relationships with my patients, and I can't even count anymore. I've gained so many contacts, even with people in the industry from different areas. They've noticed some of my work and what I've done to get the patient retention and keep the patients involved. And I believe 100% and wholeheartedly that diverse staff in which we have has helped us to grow tremendously. It has been leaps and bounds because of the diversity that we offer. Here in Houston, we have so many cultures and so many people from Black to white to Hispanic to Asian, all of the populations that we have, and we have people to actually communicate with these people in their native language. And it makes such a huge difference and impact when you're talking to someone because they want someone that's relatable. If I'm not Spanish speaking and I'm talking to a patient about doing a research study, they're not 100% understanding me. They're not 100% confident that I'm going to be the person to help them after they leave the hospital. However, if they can relate to someone in their native language and someone that looks like them, they're more likely to follow up because they feel like, okay, they're trying to help me. Even though we're all trying to help them, but they feel more comfortable with someone that looks like them.
That's such an important
That's been my experience. It's been my experience for well over 20 years. It's definitely needed, and it needs to be a representation of them, who they are laying in that hospital bed.
100%. And I believe that's where sometimes the telehealth can come in. You know, if you don't have somebody right there with you, there's somebody available, but it's nice to have them in person and on staff and capable of connecting with those who need it most. Well, Gail, I super appreciate your time today and your insight, and it's inspiring to see the work that you do and the heart that you have for it. And we wish you another 20 years of helping patients and preventing stroke.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time as well.
And that concludes another insightful episode of Stroke Busters. Please note that the ideas and opinions shared in this podcast are our own and should not be taken as a substitute for expert medical advice. Always consult your healthcare provider before initiating any program or therapy to ensure you receive personalized and optimal care tailored to your specific needs. And if you found today's episode informative and want to stay updated on all things Stroke Busters, don't forget to connect with us on social media. We are on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, X, and YouTube, and you'll receive the latest updates on upcoming episodes and can share our content with your colleagues, friends, and family to spread stroke awareness. For the latest news, updates, and information about the Stroke Institute, including research, programs, events, and more, visit us online at uth.edu/stroke-institute. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your preferred platform. Hit that follow button to ensure you never miss an episode. We have exciting discussions planned for you, so stay informed, stay curious, and stay engaged. Thank you for being an integral part of the Stroke Busters community. Until next time, take care.